Open Air is a call-in talk show on KZSU Stanford featuring Zen teacher Sherry Huber and hosted by Michael Gray. Every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m., we talk about the challenges and opportunities in life. Call us at 650-723-9010 to experience the freedom that comes from exploring the possibilities available to each of us today. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray. It's great to be here today. It's a beautiful day in California. Sherry's not with us today. We have a special pre-recorded show on money that I think you'll find very exciting. I enjoyed it. And we'll be live again with Sherry on Tuesday, March 30th. That's 2 weeks from today. So please feel free to call us then. In the meantime, you can email us your questions. Our email address is openair@kzsu.org. Again, that's openair@kzsu.org. Archives of all of our shows are available at Sherry's website. That's sherryhuber.com, spelled C-H-E-R-I-H-U-B-E-R.com. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
It's great to be here today.
It is.
Yes.
It's always great to be here. Let's face it. We love doing this.
We love doing this.
Yeah, and every week we say it's great to be here, like, you know, last week it really stunk. and it's always great to be here.
It's a lot of fun.
Just a very, very fun thing to do. There are some things in my life that I just adore. Email classes.
Yes.
One of the things that I adore. This radio show. Another thing that I adore.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
What I love about both of those is the same thing, this ability to for a bunch of us to be together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we're on retreat, my favorite part of retreat, aside from the silence and the food and all of those kinds of things, is evening group. Because it's a whole bunch of us getting together for a conversation.
Yes.
And so to me, that's Sangha. That's the best of Sangha. We're all together. We're all doing the same thing. We're supporting one another in our practice. We're all mm-hmm. waking up and ending suffering together.
Yes.
And so here, this radio show to me is that.
Yeah. It's like a group discussion.
Yeah.
On a big scale.
On a big scale.
Yes.
And we can't see each other, but still we know we're out there.
We know we're out there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Some people would say we're really out there, but that's not the out there that I'm referring to.
Yes.
So, in fact, one of the things that we talked about that, I go around all over the place, and people will say to me, oh, I listen to the show every week. It's great. I love it. I love, I love keeping up with the practice. And, of course, I have no idea, and you have no idea, who actually is out there listening.
Yes.
It could be three people. It could be thousands of people.
Yes.
We hope it's thousands. If
yes.
it's only three, well, we're glad they're listening.
Yes.
And we
yes.
would still do it, right, if they
yes.
stopped listening, let's face it, because as we've established, we love doing this.
Yes. Yes.
So what we were talking about is asking people to email us if they are out there listening. And it's not a commitment, you know. It's not like we're going to harangue you about calling in or any of those things. Just an email to say, I'm out here listening. And maybe, you know, this is what I like about the show, and this is how I'd like it to be different, or whatever, if they're helpful suggestions that people have. Or compliments. We're always open
to those. Compliments are good.
Yeah, they're good, too. And if people would like to be on a mailing list so
yes.
that we can have that ability to stay in touch and communicate, we've been blessed with having this show in the same time slot for a long time now.
Yes.
And because of the structure of the station, that could change. And so it would be wonderful to be able to let people know. We've talked about making sure that it's easy for people to hear us.
Yes.
If people are having problems, you know, maybe their friends can't get the show or whatever, we would like to have the opportunity to address those kinds of things. So
yes.
if people are willing, where would they write to us?
Openair@kzsu.org.
Yeah.
So right. Send us an email. Let us know if you'd be willing to be on the email list.
Yeah, and send us an email even if you're not. Send
even
us an email
not.
And say, no, I don't want to be contacted. I let you know I'm out here listening. That's enough.
Yes.
And so either way is fine with us. We would just like to get a sense of how large our Sangha is and like that.
Yes. And Sangha means, of course?
Sangha means the group of people who practice together. Mm-hmm. So what the Buddha taught was Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. So Bodhi is awakening, enlightenment, the experience of ending suffering. Mm-hmm. Dharma is what we practice, the kind of the how of,
yes.
of all of that. And Sangha, the community of people who do that together.
Mm-hmm.
So he referred to it as three facets of the same jewel.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't say, you know, Dharma is more important than Sangha,
yes.
and Bodhi is more important than all. He
yes.
says they go together. They're all essentially they're all one thing.
Yes. Yes.
So, so it's important. I've mentioned this to a couple of people, and I don't know if I can't actually remember if we've talked about it. But one of the things that I learned about myself in Italy, and especially immersing myself in the life of St. Francis and all the history of his life, was that Sangha is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
I project onto St. Francis that the joy of his life and what his life was devoted to was getting all your pals together and love God.
Mm-hmm.
So you all get together, you all love God.
Yes.
And then you do whatever.
Yes.
And he was very Buddhist, actually, in his orientation to life. Because what, I don't know if you know this, but what they did is spend all day working. So they would go out and they would find people who needed stuff done, and they would work for them. And then the people would feed them.
Fascinating.
And then they would go back to their place where all the monks stayed, and they would essentially have group discussion as we do on retreat. You know, they would talk about what they had seen during the day and what they had realized, and then they would have times where they would be in silence and kind of on retreat, and they would go off to places and pray and meditate and be alone, and then they would come back together and they would head out and find people who needed some work done and trade their work for food.
Fascinating.
And and you know, it's a good life.
Sounds a lot like awareness practice.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes.
And it's a good life.
It's a good life.
So having like-minded people to support us in what we're doing, having our friends around us and as we practice is a it's just a great thing.
That's a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
And those three aspects of the jewel, in my experience, they're all amazing.
Yes. Each one. Sometimes as we go along, we can be more into Sangha because sometimes people come to a practice because they feel isolated or alienated.
I see.
You know, it's like, am I the only one who thinks this way? Am I the only one who, you know, and then fill in the end of the sentence, you know, thinks society is insane or we've lost our priorities or, you know, the values are not in keeping with what I think is important.
Yes.
And then people come together with other folks and say, oh, this is great. You know, if somebody understands me.
Yes.
And then from that, they begin to practice. And then eventually, possibly, take it to that focus of, well, I'd like to awaken and end suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Some people seek out a meditation group or a retreat or a workshop or whatever because they know they want to end suffering.
Yes.
Sometimes people have been practicing the Dharma for years before they ever decide that they want to meet other people who are doing the same thing. They just do it on their own. They read books. And I did that. When I started sitting practice, you know, barefoot through the snow, you know, that kind of thing.
Uphill.
Yeah, uphill.
Both ways.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. But the thing about it is, there weren't any books. There were probably, that I was able to get my hands on, probably three books. And fortunately, and there, as it turned out, the Shasta Abbey was up in Mount Shasta City. I think Philip Kaplow's place was in Rochester, New York. Mm-hmm. I don't even think the Zen Center of Los Angeles was there. I could be wrong about that. Uh-huh. So, you know, there were these little isolated places, but I didn't know it. Yes. And one of the books that I found taught people how to meditate. So
great.
I learned from a book, and yes. And I practiced for a long time on my own, just making it up, and and it was fine. And I know from talking to people that an awful lot of people do that. They just they start to sit, and then they read a book and kind of watch what happens to them, and they, you know, they try to do what that person suggests, and then somewhere down the road they think, you know, maybe it, inventing the wheel is not necessary. Maybe there are other people. Or just, I'm to the place now where I feel like I want to take the next step, or, you know, I'd like another viewpoint. And so then they seek out Sangha, but they've already been on the path of Bodhi, of awakening.
Yes. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
It's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Wonderful. And today we're going to talk a little bit about money.
Now, there's a segue.
There's a segue. It's kind of a one sentence.
Yeah.
That's, I was trying to figure out how to transition it. But
just put it out there. That's great, because the thing that I like about that little transition is that is one of the areas of life that an awful lot of people are conditioned to believe is outside spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I've learned in my devotion to Francis, one of the things that people liked best about him was that he absolutely refused to have anything to do with money. And that is seen by many people as a mark of the truly spiritual, that they want nothing to do with money or anything of this world, essentially. And I was talking with someone at my insurance company today, a young woman who was doing my claim because I was in a car accident yesterday.
Yes.
And I can't remember how we got on the subject, but she said to me, well, you know, people forget that it's not money that's the issue. It's the love of money. And she's right. That's the, you know, that's the real biblical quote. It's not money is the root of all evil. It's the love of money is the root of all evil. And she said, an awful lot of good things can be done with money if people want to use money to do good things. And I was telling her that one of my great heroes and one of the, well, probably the only person on the planet that I kind of skate over next to envying is Oprah Winfrey. And the reason is that she has all of that clout. You know, she sees something that she wants to do, and, you know, she just writes a $10 million check.
Yes.
It's not, you know, okay, this is a good thing to do. Now, where do we get the money? And all of the people in the world who have a an important, good, really good thing that they want to do are trying to get money from the same sources. And it's difficult. And if you have a ton of money and you're motivated to do good things with it, a lot of stuff can get done. So, not money. Money's not a problem. Money's money's like food. Money's like anything else. It's how. It's a what.
It's a form of energy.
That's right. Yeah. It's a piece of content.
Yes.
And how we are with that makes all the difference, whether it's takes us to suffering or takes us away from suffering.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I have a bunch of quotes here, and some of them are very interesting. One is by Francois de la Rochefoucauld.
Very good.
Thank you.
And Spanish is actually your second language, isn't it?
Yes.
Not French. That was very impressive.
Before we set our hearts too much upon anything, let us examine how happy those are who already possess it.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah. So that's interesting. One of the things that I think about periodically is the number of people's lives that are ruined by winning the lottery. An awful lot of people think, if I won the lottery, then da, 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 da. So we look at the people who have won the lottery, and their lives have been ruined by it.
Mm.
So is that really something that we want? Of course, most of us would say, well, but I'd be different. It wouldn't ruin my life.
Yes.
But truly, I don't know that because I've never won the lottery.
Yes.
So it's something, they probably think that too, but something happens
yes.
in that process, and it turns out not to be happy as they thought it would be.
Can you say more about what that process is or what happens?
Well, I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
I know some of the things that I've read indicate that it's really hard on relationships.
Uh-huh.
So suddenly you win the lottery,
mm-hmm.
and now people are just coming out of the woodwork to get a piece of that.
Yes.
And we would think, well, you know, those would be bad, greedy people. But you find out they're your friends and
yes.
your family.
Yes. Yes.
And people don't like it that you have a lot of money and you won't give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the attention.
Yes.
I was kidding with somebody, in fact, about that with Oprah Winfrey the other day. And I said, but, you know, the advantage I have over Oprah Winfrey is I can go to a restaurant.
Yes.
She can't.
Yes.
Well, maybe she does. I don't know. But I
yes.
bet it's just, you know, it's like the president going out for a cup of coffee.
Yes.
With how many Secret Service people and bodyguards and, you know, you take over the whole place. So on the one hand, it looks grand and glorious.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend, we're not like this, but who dated Julia Roberts.
Uh-huh.
And he said that was the most bizarre thing all of his life. If, you know, you want to go out and get a coffee? And you get up and go out and get a coffee.
Yes.
They couldn't go out and get a coffee.
Yes.
So, yeah, how is it for people who already have it? We think, oh, but if I had all that money, if I had that kind of fame, if I had that kind of power, I'd use it really well. And but we really haven't had that experience. And we it's hard to imagine what kind of holes we might be inclined to step in.
Another piece of that occurred to me is if we don't have a model for receiving,
yes.
then how do we know what to do with all that?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. If we don't trust ourselves, if we don't have confidence in our ability to make decisions and handle life, if we tend to feel guilty, those kinds of issues that maybe in my regular life I can kind of keep under wraps.
Yes.
A change like that would really bring everything just rushing to the fore.
Yeah. Feels like magnifying everything that's already going on.
Yeah, just a big spotlight on it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. Here's another quote from Benjamin Franklin. He that is of the opinion money will do everything may well be suspected of doing everything for money.
Ooh.
And it's just
that guy, he just goes right to the heart, huh?
He goes right to the core.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking about our culture, at least my interpretation of it, you know, a real focus on money and getting and having and spending.
Oh, in fact, I had a request recently for folks were journalists were putting out a request for people to talk about violence in schools because it's the 5th anniversary of Columbine. And I thought, what? You know, that's a statement about our culture right there. It's been 5 years since that tragedy, and we're going to remember it and drag it up and make headlines out of it and focus our attention on it for whatever, until there's a worse tragedy, and then Columbine will slip away, and we'll start celebrating the anniversary of the newest, latest tragedy. But I was being asked for a perspective on that, and I was just having one of those, you know, I'm really tired of this kind of days, and I said, well, here we are, a culture that is generously, if we're going to be generous, we'll say is primarily focused on making the most amount of money possible.
Mm-hmm.
Another word for that is greed.
Mm-hmm.
And then after we have pursued that, because we don't want to take assault weapons off of the open market, because,
mm-hmm.
Often you'll need an assault weapon in your daily life. We don't want to address the issues of the violence that surrounds this culture in media and in
mm-hmm.
every way. We don't want to address the fact that there is nobody left to raise children because families can't make it in this culture.
Mm-hmm.
By the definition of this culture of making it,
yes.
Without both parents working more than full time to try
yes.
to maintain the lifestyle that they are conditioned to believe they need to have for the
yes.
children. So here's everybody just in pursuit of almighty dollar.
Yes.
And then the way we deal with the consequences of our obsession is to punish the victims.
Mm-hmm.
So we put huge wire fences around our children. We put metal detectors that they have to go through to get into the school.
Mm-hmm.
We test them for drugs. We search them. We, you know, what is wrong with this?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. To me, it's just insane.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I'm right there with Ben.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is absolutely so. When we look at the values that supposedly we have in this culture, and then we look at what's really going on in this
mm-hmm.
culture, to me it's just glaring.
Uh-huh. So the supposed values of freedom, honesty,
home,
integrity,
family, our children,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yet, what are we really doing?
Mm-hmm.
Pursuing money
mm-hmm.
in any way we can get it. The information that we're getting nonstop is we are a nation of crooks.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So all of these ideas that we have about honesty and integrity, and clearly it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be true because it's business. You know, in Buddhism, for a long time, in many cultures, when it came time to take the Buddhist precepts, businessmen, because
mm-hmm.
that's all the business people we had, businessmen were not expected to take any vows that would have to do with honesty or integrity around business. So they didn't have to take the vow about not stealing.
That is amazing.
Because mm-hmm. you can't be in business and have a vow of not stealing. How could you make any money?
That's amazing.
And we're right there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Fascinating. Fascinating. And along those lines, in the pursuit of that dollar, it seems that there's a sense of never enough.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, from a Buddhist perspective, or from the perspective of Zen awareness practice, or however we want to
mm-hmm.
talk about that, this issue is an issue of egocentric karmic conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
So this is that illusion of a separate self, survival, I, me, mine,
yes.
Women and children first, after me, you know, it's just ego, ego, ego. So we know
yes.
it's never going to be enough.
Yes.
The delusion is, well, I'll get this much, and then I'll be able to, but that's not true. And we can know that if we look at that process in any area of our lives.
Hmm.
Constantly playing the game of, if I get this, if I do that, if that happens, then I'll be satisfied.
Hmm.
Okay? Well, most people we know have achieved an awful lot of those kinds of goals.
Mm-hmm.
Are we satisfied?
Mm-hmm.
No, because it just starts in
yeah.
with the next thing.
The next
okay,
level.
Well, that was nice, but you know what I really need, or what's really important, or what we really have to do here, or the thing that... So that dissatisfaction that is the, it's what sustains, it's what maintains, it's dissatisfaction is the life force of egocentricity. Mm-hmm. So it's going to constantly be, okay, all right, so that's enough money, because even I can't justify needing more than $750 billion in my own personal account. So now what I need is more power, more, now what I need is more sex. Now what I need is a better partner, a bigger house, more bigger houses, lots more bigger houses. So it, the dissatisfaction just is always there, really feeding on what we're giving it. And then here's the really deadly part, because that would be fine if it always fed on externals, but it feeds on the individual. So I have all of this, and I'm still not happy. What is the matter with me? Okay, well, I need better drugs. I need, okay, I still don't feel the way I want to feel. Well, I really am a mess. I mean, there's something really wrong with me. Okay, so it's my fault. I feel bad. I feel guilty. I feel all of, I need to have more so that I don't feel those feelings.
Even though I have all these houses and cars and
which is, whatever. You know, back to your first French fellow.
Yes.
That's the whole point. We look at people who have all of the things that we think will make us happy.
Yes.
Are they happy? They don't look happy. They don't seem to be happy. I've had this fantasy recently, as a matter of fact, of going around the world trying to find happy people. You know, I want to know, because, you know, it could just be a projection.
What? That people are not happy?
That's right. Maybe they're all happy and I'm not. So I thought it would be fun just to find happy people and interview them and see what their lives are like. What? And what is it that makes them happy? How do they account for this happiness? What is happiness?
Yes.
Because having all the money in the world, having all of the possessions in the world, just to me, I could be missing something here, but it doesn't look to me like it's leading to the happiness that people are hoping for.
Fascinating. And along those lines, here's another quote from Benjamin Franklin. Who is rich? He that is content. Who is that? Nobody.
He was a Buddhist too, wasn't he?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Wow. So let me just throw my ignorance right out here on the table. He's, what,
1706 to 1790.
Oh, okay, good. So 1740, right in the middle there. Now, don't we think that back there when life was simpler and everything was easier, weren't people more content? Apparently not. So discontent, that insatiable driving force of egocentricity. And to me, of course, what we're closing in on is that's where the work needs to be done. I need to learn how to be satisfied, not I need to get the next thing that's going to be satisfied, because when I look back, there have been a lot of them. I've gotten a lot of them.
Yes.
I'm still not satisfied.
Yes.
So if I figure out how to be satisfied, then I'm free to have or not have whatever. But it's not, I'm not getting it or doing it, or not getting and not doing it, so that I'll have an experience that I'm not currently having.
Say that last piece again.
Anytime we're doing something to get another experience, We're lost. We're doomed, because it's just never going to happen. So if I am dissatisfied now because I don't have enough money, and I'm believing that when I have enough money, I'll be satisfied, I'm doomed. So if I learn how to be satisfied now, I'm content now, my life just as it is perfect, then have whatever. Don't have whatever. People are afraid of spirituality. They're afraid of awareness practice. Spirituality, the way we do it, you know, or yes. kind of the Mother Teresa form of spirituality, mm-hmm. where it's not a theory, it's a practice. It's what,
yes.
it's what you're actually
it's like
doing.
Real life.
Yeah, real life. People are afraid of that because the voices of conditioning say, well, you'll have to give up everything. Mm-hmm. Then you'll never have any money. You'll never have any sex, obviously, because you know that's wrong. You'll never get to do what you want to do. You
yes.
can't. You can't want to look good because that's just so. You know, you just really need to stay away from the whole thing because mm-hmm. otherwise your life is over.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's just horsepucky, as I like to refer to it.
Yes,
it's just it's simply not true.
Yes.
It's just conditioning's way of keeping us asleep, keeping mm-hmm. us from actually looking at what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I bet we have a break coming up at some point. And after the break, I want us to talk a little bit about a book that I'm reading that I'm hoping everybody will rush out and buy
mm.
and read. Of course. And then we can, when the next chance that we have to all get together, we can talk about
mm-hmm.
Some of the ideas in this book, because they're very much what we're talking about
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We're having a fascinating conversation about money today, and we're not taking your calls today. So call us when we're back on the air again. And we're going to have a break now, and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We are not taking calls today, but we're going to be back on the air on Tuesday, March 30th, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific time. And we'd love to hear from you at that time.
Yes, and hopefully, if people are interested, they can run out and pick up a copy of The Middle Mind, Why Americans Don't Think for Themselves, by a fellow named Curtis White.
Yes.
And it's Zen practice in a very different form.
Different language.
Completely different language. The idea of the book, as I've gotten it so far, is kind of the relationship between imagination and reality. And how anything that is outside of what has been termed reality, and he takes on higher education, entertainment, and politics,
mm-hmm.
where things are defined for us.
Yes.
And so if we think of something that's outside of that, then it runs into the way we think, and it's just basically written off because it's not reality. It's not true. It's not possible. It's not. This is the way it is.
I see.
And so it's the whole issue of it delivers an unflinching and wry look at the dumbing down of the American imagination.
Mm. Mm.
So I'm hoping that those of us who are working hard at seeing through that conditioning process and getting back to an authentic moment in which intelligence reigns, we'll have a lively discussion about what
yes.
Mr. White has to say.
Yes. That's fascinating, that idea between reality and imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Which I hear as, you know, being centered or being identified and lost in some...
Lost in conditioning, in some
conditioning.
Belief system about...
Yes.
My teacher used to say a couple of the worst reasons in the world. I've always been that way.
Uh-huh. Worst reasons for anything.
For anything. Just worst, you know, worst places that you can come from. You know,
yes.
I've always done it that way.
Hmm.
I've always been like that.
Hmm.
And the whole idea that these expressions like, you can't teach an old dog new
tricks.
That whole, he would say, get over that. That is a bad excuse.
Yeah.
So you've always been that way. Good. Now's it.
Now's the time to be different.
Now is an excellent time to be different. And what, you know, so you've been that way. How does that justify being that way in the future? You know, we could easily think, oh, I've always been that way. And so that's a really good reason to be completely different in the future. Because I can look at where it got me.
Yes. Yes. We've been talking about money today. We've had some great quotes. Some of them are in this fascinating book called Sex and Money Are Dirty, Aren't They?
Aren't they?
Aren't they?
I think so. In our culture, they are.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a book by Sherry Huber. It's a guided journal with lots of great questions. You start from one end and you look at your beliefs around sexuality, and you start at another end and you look at money.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, again, the two subjects that are just really kept outside of awareness practice. Tremendous suffering. That's another thing I'd love to hear from people about. Is there anything in life that people suffer over more than those two subjects? And I project that people suffer over them in a lot the same ways. You know, there are things that you want. You feel guilty about it, feel bad, feel like the wanting makes you a bad person, mm-hmm. And yet you want it and mm-hmm. sort of don't know what to do with it. And there are things that parents don't talk with kids about
mm-hmm.
Because it's because they're taboo subjects.
Yes.
They're not normal. It's not easy. It's not casual conversation. They're big and heavy topics, and we get very few how-tos about them. Just mm-hmm. a whole lot of mm-hmm. weirdness.
Mixed messages.
Mixed messages and weirdness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking earlier today, what is it about these subjects that makes them so charged?
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing, you know, because I have this paranoid view of life.
Mm-hmm.
So I really, and Curtis White's book, I'm so mm-hmm. fascinated by, because to me it's leading to the same thing. There's this huge force attempting to stupefy us. Now, I think a part of that is the same greed. People uh-huh. who are afraid, people who are desirous and feeling bad about themselves are really very easy to control and mm-hmm. manipulate.
Yes.
And there, you know, people who are controllable and manipulatable will spend a lot of money to try to get better,
mm-hmm.
to try to atone in some way, to mm-hmm. become the person that they should be.
Mm-hmm.
So if we take these things that are very close to people, close to who they perceive themselves to be, kind of core mm-hmm. needs.
Yes.
And that becomes identified as something that is bad or shameful, something that you
yes.
can't talk, then you can't get any information about it. So there's really no ability to free oneself mm-hmm. from it. It's really mm-hmm. a unique person who can, through their own introspective processes,
yes.
free themselves from the bondage of one of these kinds of issues.
Yes.
We don't tend to just spontaneously feel good about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So how many people, I know sexuality is going to be our next topic of discussion, but how many people go through an entire lifetime feeling bad about themselves because of their sexuality, having nowhere to go with it, nobody, mm-hmm. you know, nobody to really talk to about it, get to the end of their life, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just kind of ruled by it through an entire lifetime, get to the end of your life, and feel bad about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, karmically, of course, that's an interesting place to be, because
yes.
that, for those who are not opposed to the idea of rebirth, it really sets up the next lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And for most people, I think for an awful lot of people, Well, you can go a lot of ways. You know, if you struggled as a man, then you can decide that being a woman would be a better, easier uh-huh. way. Or if you're a woman, you look at men and say, well, they certainly don't have the problems about this that we do, so I'm going to have an incarnation as a male. Or maybe you just get there and say, you know, okay, now I've learned all this about what it's like to be a female, so I need another incarnation as a female to get it right. And money the same way. You know, looking at people, I'm poor, I look at people with money, I think they have it all together, then, you know, now I have a lot of money, and I'm thinking, you know, the poor people really are happier than they're simple, you know, they love their children, they get to stay home. You know, I think being poor is really the answer. And then yes. from the, so duality, of course, is what we're, you know, what we're looking at with mm-hmm. this, that dualistic, that way is better, that way is better. If I only had that, no, more money is good. No, less money is good. More sex is good. No, less sex. You know, if I didn't have any sex drive at all, then I would be a really happy person. So not being able to bring conscious awareness to these topics in the same way. Well, of course, people have guilt and shame about, almost everything
yes.
when you think about it. So yes. if I have an eating issue, I mean, I go to OA, okay, mm-hmm. Overeater Anonymous, mm-hmm. Overeaters Anonymous. Mm-hmm. If it's alcohol, Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-hmm. Drugs, Narcotics, no, that's not
yeah.
right. Narcotic
yeah.
Addicts Anonymous.
Yes.
yeah, so whatever it is, I have to hide that, feel bad about that, mm-hmm. feel that I'm outside of the group.
Mm-hmm.
In awareness practice, one of the things that we look at again is it's not what, it's how. So,
yes.
okay, so your thing is this, and my thing is that, and his thing is that, and her thing is that. And the point is, we're all in bondage over something.
Mm-hmm.
There's something that we don't have freedom about.
Yes.
So how can we now look at the issue of freedom rather than staying stuck in, I'm a bad person because I have this problem with
yes.
this unacceptable thing.
Yes. Yes. It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
How
it really is, because what we're taught so misses the point. So here, Curtis White is talking about Americans not thinking for themselves. To me, an equally interesting part of it is that we are taught how to think in ways that keep us stuck in these suffering loops.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we're in there not thinking anything, because mm-hmm. we don't know how to think for ourselves, or we don't think for ourselves. We think we are thinking for ourselves.
Yes.
It's just that what we're thinking is a brainwashing loop. Part of that brainwashing loop is to make us believe that we are thinking for ourselves.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's within that whole small system that we think we're thinking for ourselves
mm-hmm.
and seeing everything.
Yes.
Not realizing that there's a larger world out there.
Yes. That's a good image, that there's that small system,
mm-hmm.
and when we're in that small system, we think it's the whole universe.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting information about what is so and what is true and what's right
mm-hmm.
and what's wrong and
mm-hmm.
good and bad and all of those mm-hmm. other things, and who we are for having the perceptions and the feelings that we have. So there we are. Of course, in Zen practice, it's not so much a matter of learning to think for ourselves as stepping outside that small system
mm-hmm.
so that we can see that small system for what it is. And of course, I think Mr. White is doing the same thing. I think his mm-hmm. book is designed to get people, help people to step outside that small system
mm-hmm.
and have a larger view. Because
mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, the moment people step outside the small system and recognize it as a small system,
mm-hmm.
that's liberation.
Yes.
The difficulty is the system is designed to pull us right back in.
Mm-hmm. So that we don't see.
Yeah. So there's a brief glimpse, but part of the small system is I have a brief glimpse. And then one of the ways that I'm pulled back in there is, why can't you hold on to it? You know better. Mm-hmm. You've seen what it's really like. But mm-hmm. here you are. You're still just as limited as ever. Mm-hmm. So all of the exits... all of the exits just toss us right back into
yes.
the into
yes.
the soup, yes. which of course what fascinates me about awareness practice, because as long as we're trying to do something, as long as we're trying to get out, we're stuck. It's like flypaper. Mm-hmm. We're just mm-hmm. trapped in it.
Yeah.
The only way out is to sit still and see it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect Mr. White calls that thinking. I call it paying attention.
Yes, yes.
You're seeing it for what it is. And in that seeing, there's a realization that I am not that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in the conditioned world, that statement is crazy.
Yes, yes.
What would you be if not that?
Mm-hmm.
If you're not your thoughts, what are you? Of course you're your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Of course you're your feelings. Of course, mm-hmm. that's you. That's who you are.
Mm-hmm. I'm a person who...
Yeah, stop imagining that something else is going on.
Mm-hmm. Or that something else is possible.
That's right.
Yes, I've always been this way.
I've always been this way. It's always been this way.
This must be true.
That old-time religion is good enough for me.
Yes.
Yeah, it was good enough for my father. It was good enough for my mother.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when I think about the media and, you know, these people, they must be telling the truth and...
Why would they not?
Yes.
Yeah, why would they not be telling us the truth?
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, I think this is part of this thinking for ourselves. If you listen to media that is larger than, you know, the television evening news, you get a lot of information about what's going on in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the pieces of information that we get is their leaders are lying to them.
In other countries.
In other countries.
Uh-huh.
Their leaders are lying to them.
Uh-huh.
And we listen to this with kind of attitude, rarely suspecting that what they're noticing about us is the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just, whatever political party happens to be in power at the time. It's just part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
It's how it's done. You know, mm-hmm. parents lie to children, and bosses lie to employees, and governments lie to citizens, and we lie to ourselves. So it's a complete package.
We've completed the loop.
Yes.
Yes. How do we get out of that?
Well, I think, as far as I can tell, again, the quickest, easiest way is just to sit still and watch it fall apart.
Mm.
Because if there's nobody fighting against it, if there's nobody engaged, putting life force, putting energy into it, it just falls apart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then we're free to move in whatever direction.
Yes.
So if I really watch my relationship with money really closely, what I believe about it, what the workbook helps us with
mm-hmm.
that,
mm-hmm.
What did my parents believe? How did they live their lives? What kinds of financial decisions did they make? How do I make my financial decisions? What do I do with my money? All of those examining, all of those beliefs and assumptions that we have, all of the aspects of the personality that are involved in this, we begin to see that we are maintaining an entire world view
mm-hmm.
through how we approach money, what we believe about it, what we avoid about it, how we don't take responsibility. Who I am is being maintained in my relationship to money. So as I watch that, one of the first things that I would question is that really who I want to be? Hmm. A lot of times people question that when they're in financial hell. You know, they can't make money, they can't save money, they can't, you know, it's not working. So at that point of suffering and desperation, we decide to look at something other, another possibility from the one that we've been
mm-hmm.
pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
Or the ultimate radical approach, we begin to look at ourselves,
mm-hmm.
considering that I might be the problem in my finances. So as we ask these questions and observe ourselves in our relationship with finances, we begin to see the structure that we're holding in place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually something that actually we say on a regular basis. So it's, I'm just not good with money. Or, I think I'm just doomed to be poor for the rest of my life. Or, maybe a belief that comes out that people with money are selfish and shallow. So, of course, whatever this belief is,
yes,
I'm going to need to maintain it.
It's self-fulfilling.
It's self-fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's not, and if most of what we do in response to this sort of thing is seek self-improvement. So, you just have to work on yourself. You have to get a better program. You have to buy the money program that's going to help you manage your money on your computer so that, so if you were just a different person, once again, it's back to you. You know, there's something wrong with you. If you were just a better person, a different person, then you wouldn't be having these problems. So just fix yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if we sit still and pay attention, just watch it, see what it is, then we can get a sense of what the structure is that's being the identity that's being held in place through this.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as we see that, we can ask ourselves, is that the structure I want? Is that a belief system that I want to have operate my life?
Mm.
No. Okay. Well, then what opens up as a
mm-hmm.
result of that?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not maintaining that structure, then what is possible?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like life is possible.
Yes. Yes. Any relationship that I want is possible.
Yes. In the sense of stepping outside of that small system.
Yes.
Whether the small system is money or my beliefs about sex or whatever.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. What's important in life? What a meaningful life is?
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing an email class now on fabulous
questions.
Yeah. Fabulous questions. And again, what comes up so often is, what's my purpose?
Mm-hmm.
What should I be doing? What
mm-hmm.
should I be doing with my life?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that's a big, interesting belief system and structure to be holding in place.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I love your answer to that question, which I hear as, living.
Yeah.
What you should be doing is living.
Yeah. 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 It's like a walnut tree asking, what is my purpose here? I produce these nuts every year, but what am I really here for?
Yes.
Yeah, we would think, what a deluded tree you are.
Yes.
But we ask it caught up in one of those structures, in one mm-hmm. of those suffering loops, and it's a very sincere asking. The person who is asking
mm-hmm.
that question is really suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So when we step back and look at it, saying, well, now what is that getting me,
mm-hmm.
actually?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm dissatisfied. I'm missing the life that I have. I'm assuming that I should be somewhere else, be somebody else, be doing something else.
Yes.
So I'm not present to the life that I have.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Amazing. I'd like to read one more quote here, and this is by Donald Trump. Money was never a big motivation for me, except as a way to keep score. The real excitement is playing the game.
Hmm. And interesting, obviously, I'm guessing, from his point of view, having more money is winning.
Hmm. Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it seems that, as you sort of touched on, it's the excitement of living life.
Yes.
The content is irrelevant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it fun? Are you having fun?
Yes.
Are you getting up every day and having fun?
Yes.
If you're not, then learn to have fun. Don't try to find something else to do that's going to make you have fun. Because if you're not having fun, it's because you're not a fun person. Okay, so that's job one. Learn to be a fun person.
Yes.
And then have fun with everything in your life. And when it's not fun, don't do that anymore.
Yes.
Take your fun self somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Actually, you don't have to take your fun self somewhere else. When it's not fun, life just drops it.
Uh-huh.
And then the next thing is there.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
At least that's my experience.
Yes. So there's, as we often talk about, there's the process and there's the content.
Mm-hmm.
So the process would be how to be a fun person, how to have fun.
Yes.
And what we see is that that's independent of whatever we think the fun thing is.
Yes.
the content.
Yeah, so you can have fun with money, you can have fun with sex, you can have fun with your family, you can have fun with your job, you can have fun with your house, you can have fun having nothing, going nowhere.
Or you can be miserable with all the same same content.
Yes.
Interesting stuff. Yes. We're near the end of our hour here. Do you want to give some homework for people to get back to
us? I'm hoping I'm going to give the same homework here until I start hearing from people. I'll just, that's my technique. I'll just nag until I just beat people down about this. Actually, people close to me would say that that's true, but I'm hoping it's not too obvious in this radio show. But for those who are interested, I would love to see if people would we'll do a little book
club.
Isn't that how it goes?
Yes.
Have a little book club and read The Middle Mind by Curtis White.
The Middle Mind
as a group.
Curtis White.
Yeah, Why Americans Don't Think for Themselves. And then come back and have a discussion about that, thinking for ourselves, and how that relates to awareness practice. What is thinking for yourself as compared to waking up?
And we'll be back on the air on Tuesday, March 30th from 5 to 6 p.m., and we'd love to hear from people then.
And in the meantime, people can send in their emails letting us know, because it's always fun. How many countries? Who are we?
Yeah. Do you want to do a little recap on that?
Yeah. So send in an email saying who you are and where you're listening from, and if you would be interested in being in email contact with us, because periodically we have some news flashes to send out.
Yes.
And if you'd be willing to be in touch, great. If not, that's fine too, but we would still love to hear that who you are and where you're listening from.
Yes. And you can send your emails to openair@kzsu.org. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael.
Next up on KZSU, stay tuned for DJ Decca with another great At the Cafe Bohemian. Tonight's special is Japanese pop. Promises to be very exciting, so stay tuned. That's from 6 to 8 p.m. And then Dando C from 8 to 10 p.m. So stay tuned to KZSU. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Next week, we have a great show on sexuality. Today's show was on money, so stay tuned next week. I'd like to thank all of our listeners today. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch with us, you can reach us by email at openair@kzsu.org. Archives of all of our shows are available on Sherry's website. That's sherryhuber.com, spelled C-H-E-R-I-H-U-B-E-R.com. And we'll see you next week.